Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformation. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Happy Veterans Day to everybody listening to the show. I want to thank those who are currently serving and who has served in the past. Thank you so much for all that you've sacrificed in your service. I want to welcome everybody to an amazing episode of Life Transformation Radio. I'm your host, Master Resilience Implementer, TEDx speaker, business positioning strategist, and international best-selling author, Sean Douglas. This show is currently heard in over 90 countries. So whether it's your first time joining us or you've been listening to us for some time, I want to thank you to those who are listening from around the world. Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformation. Here, we tell the stories of why we're doing what we're doing, highlighting that transformational moment that changed our lives and how we use it to then transform others and elevate their lives as well. You can listen to us live right here on the Blog Talk Radio Network, Tuesday through Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can also join our Facebook group at Life Transformation Radio Community and never miss an episode by subscribing where you listen to podcasts. Life Transformation Radio is heard on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spreaker, Spotify, TuneIn, Player FM, Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Overcast, CastBox, Himalaya app, Google Podcasts, available on Pandora, and you can subscribe to us on our YouTube channel at Life Transformation Radio. On the show, my guests are entrepreneurs, speakers, business owners, coaches, podcasters, authors, amazing human beings that are impacting the world around them. And my guest today does exactly that. If you have any questions for any of the guests that I bring on the show during our live broadcast, go ahead and give us a call at 657-383-1109. Again, the number is 657-383-1109. And with that, please help me welcome to the show my amazing guest for today, author Steve Snyder. Steve, welcome to Life Transformation Radio.
Well, thank you very much, Sean. I'm glad to be here. Happy Veterans Day.
Thank you so much. Same to you. I appreciate you coming on the show. And when I read the email, I was like, holy smokes, I got to get this guy on my show. Because the story is absolutely incredible, and it really is close to home for you.
Oh, I'll say. Yeah. Without a doubt.
Without a doubt. Oh, yeah, man. And so, I'm excited because it is Veterans Day, and I really, really wanted to have this type of story on Veterans Day. I thought it was very fitting, very honorable to do that. So, again, I really appreciate you coming on. The title of the episode is Shot Down, a Veterans Day Story with author Steve Snyder. He's a UCLA graduate and in 2009 retired from Vision Service Plan after a 36-year career working in sales and sales management. He then began his quest to learn more about World War II experiences of his father, pilot Howard Snyder, and the crew of the B-17 Susan Ruth. It became his passion, and after 4.5 years of dedicated research resulted in his book, Shot Down. An Amazon number one bestseller and recipient of more than 25 national book awards, Shot Down is set within the framework of World War II, and it's in Europe, and recounts the dramatic experiences of each member of a 10-man B-17 bomber crew after their plane, piloted by author Steve Snyder's father, was knocked out of the sky by German fighters over the French-Belgian border on February 8, 1944. Some men died, some were captured, and became prisoners of war. Some men evaded capture and were missing in action for months before making it back to England. Their individual stories and those of the courageous Belgian people who risked their lives to help them are all different and remarkable. Steve is a member of numerous World War II organizations and past president of the 306th Bomb Group Historical Association. He keeps busy making PowerPoint presentations to all types of organizations and attending air shows around the country, signing copies of his book. You can look at his website at stevesnyderauthor.com. Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, and Twitter right there in the show notes. You can connect with them on your favorite platform, send them a friend request, letting them know that you listened to this episode of Life Transformation Radio. Steve, the first question that I have to ask, and I believe is the most important question you could ever ask, is why? Why did you write the book? Why do you do what you do? Steve, are you still there? Steve, are you there? But while we get Steve back on, I want everybody to go to Amazon right now and go to Amazon and the book Shot Down. It's available on Amazon. And if you go to stevesnyderauthor.com, you can check out everything that he does with all of his associations that he's a part of. You can read more about the book and you can see exactly what he's doing there with all of the attending the air shows, and you can get a copy of his book. So, Steve,
can you hear me, Sean?
I can hear you now.
The power just went out in my house. Well, I heard guys working outside. They must have been working on the electrical box, but the whole power just shut down. That's why I disappeared.
Oh no! I was like, Steve, are you here?
Yeah.
Wow. No problem. So I wanted to know, what was your why? Why did you write the book? Why do you do what you do?
Okay. Well, after I retired, I had the time to really delve into my dad's history in more detail. Growing up, I knew the basics, that he was a B-17 pilot. He was stationed in England with the 8th Air Force. His plane was named the Susan Ruth after my oldest sister, who was 1 year old at the time that he went overseas. And he flew bombing missions over occupied Europe. And on February 8th of 44, his plane was shot down. And he was missing in action for 7 months. But he evaded capture from the Germans and eventually made it back to England. And after I retired, I just wanted to learn more details. My parents had kept a lot of material about the war years. And I just wanted to organize that and see what else I could learn. And there were two items that were really significant. One was a diary that my dad wrote while he was missing in action about his plane being shot down, which is absolutely riveting. It's in the book. And the other item were all the letters that my dad wrote to my mother while he was stationed in England before being shot down. And he was really candid in those letters. He talked about what bombing missions were like, what life was like on the air base, what life was like in London and England at the time, escapades of him and his crew. And I just became fascinated with the story of him and his crew, and it became my passion. I started reading book after book about the air war over Europe, and went on the internet, spent countless hours doing research, downloading declassified military documents. I went on a quest to find members or relatives, I should say, of all of his crew members, provide to me. I started joining World War II organizations, going to reunions, listening to veterans tell their stories. And finally, 3 years into my research, I just came to the conclusion that the story of my dad and his crew was so unique and so compelling that people needed to know about it. And so I decided to write a book. And it's changed
That's awesome.
My life.
That's awesome. I love it. That is
super
cool.
I had no writing background or training whatsoever, but I always kind of liked to write, and evidently,
sure.
But the story is just so amazing that
And it's all based on firsthand testimony by the people who were involved in the events that took place.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like
what
that.
What I added was just a great deal, actually, of historical information and anecdotes about and surrounding World War II to put the story in context and give it background.
Mm-hmm. Love it. So what was that transformational moment? What was that moment that said, you know what? Because I love that you wanted to organize everything and kind of learn more. I'm like, oh, I'm just kind of curious, you know. Love it. What was that moment, that transformational moment that you said, you know what? I got to write a book. I got to know more. Like, I'm all in on this thing. What was that moment for you?
Well, just during the research, and I was so fortunate that I know and found out so much about my dad and his crew, because most people know very little about their World War II veteran, because most World War II vets never talked about it. But a couple things really aided me. My dad didn't talk about a lot until 1989, when a memorial was erected to him and his crew in a little village of Mackenwas, Belgium, where the plane came down and where he bailed out. And he and the other three crew members that were still living at the time went over for the dedication. And there he was reunited with all these Belgian people who hid him from the Germans, revisited these homes and farmhouses where he stayed. And that brought it all back. And he started talking about it after that. And then 5 years later in 1994, I made my first trip over to Belgium. I've been there six times now. And that's when it became personal for me, because I got to see all these things firsthand. But I was still, younger with a family and busy working. And so although that made a definite impression upon me, when I started this research after retiring, I had no intention of writing a book whatsoever. But the story is just so amazing that I just felt, an obligation to tell it. There's been a lot of books written about the air war over Europe, and most of them either real large in scope, they're about all these bomb groups and all these missions, or they're about one man's story, perhaps just being a prisoner of war. But the shot down story encompasses, what happened to is one crew, and about anything that could happen to an airman happened to my dad's crew. Mm-hmm. And then also what's unique about it is it's about all these Belgian people that risked their lives trying to help him. And those people that helped my dad and other members of her crew were unbelievably courageous people, because they not only risked their lives, but those of their family and even friends, because of the German secret police, the Gestapo, found out about it. They would be arrested, tortured, and either shot or sent to a concentration camp. Mm-hmm. And some of the people who helped my dad and other members of his crew did meet that fate.
Wow. I mean, we watched the movies. There's movies like the Enola Gay and Memphis Belle, and Pearl Harbor. I mean, we watch all these movies, but just to hear it, and to know someone. I think it's a little bit different when you actually know someone, like I was there. I think it's a lot different. And I think it holds a lot of, a lot more context, to the moment, cause we watch things on TV. It's like, it's just a movie, but for some people it was really real. Like, we were there. So, I love that. Like, how it's set up, because not only do you talk about the moment that it was shot down by the Germans, but the people that were involved. You could have just wrote the book about the crew and how they did this and this and this, but you also talked about the, on the French-Belgian border, the French-Belgian people, and they all helped them either escape or hid them, or, ensure their safety. So I think that's super cool, because I think that's a big part of the story that might have been missed.
Oh, absolutely. And I probably wouldn't have written the book if it wasn't for two Belgium gentlemen Dr. Paul Delahaye and Jacques Lalot. They were young boys during the war, and they saw firsthand the atrocities committed by the Nazis against their family and friends. And later on in life, they became local historians. They interviewed all these Belgian people and members of the Belgium underground, and they documented their testimony about events that took place involving my dad and his crew. And they gave me unbelievably detailed information and pictures as well, photographs. Would have been lost forever without their dedicated research. So I owe them a huge debt. And there's over 200 time period photographs in the print book, so you can visualize everything you're reading about, many of them taken by Belgian people during the war in 1944.
That's amazing. Two of those men encouraged you to write the book, and I'm sure their stories were, from their point of view, absolutely just powerful and breathtaking. So I want to talk about...
It was from their point of view, the Belgians' point of view, you know, firsthand testimony, you know, documented, you know, testimony.
Yeah. Wow. What I want to talk about is the book. Like, so maybe people don't know who the Susan Ruth is. They may not know. I mean, some younger people may not even have heard of the Memphis Belle or any of the ones, you know, that the movies portray, and why they named those planes the way that they did, because they don't really do that anymore. You know, I'm active duty Air Force, have been for 20 years, and we don't really name planes the way that we used to. And so I've always been a crew chief on F-15s, and then I went and I've worked F-16s, I've worked A-10s, I've worked F-22s. It has a name, but, you know, we didn't put graphic art on the side of the airplane like we always do. There's nothing on the airplane that denotes, like, what it is, you know, who the name, you know. It's just, it's on its forms. You know, when you look at the forms in the book before you go out to the airplane, you look like, oh, that's the name of the airplane. But nobody even really, like, you ask most of these guys, like, what's the name of the airplane? I don't know. Like, they don't, I mean, it's just not a thing. So I don't know where it got lost at. I mean, it was kind of big when I came in. You know, you wanted your name, not only your name on the side of an airplane, but the airplane's name on it as well. But it's just like, I don't know, maybe it's the fighter world. Maybe the fighter world's a little bit different than the heavy world or the bomber world. So what's the story of the B-17 crew? You know, what's contained in the book?
Okay. Well, the first half of the book kind of builds up to the day that the plane was shot down, and then the second half of the book is all about what happened afterwards. And it's also kind of a history of the 8th Air Force, the B-17 Flying Fortress bomber, and the air war over Europe, so it gives a bigger picture. In addition to the story of the crew members, but it was on a mission to Frankfurt, Germany, on February 8th of 1944, where the B-17 Susan Ruth, again named after my oldest sister, who was 1 year old then, dropped its bombs successfully, but their bomb bay doors got hit by anti-aircraft fire. German anti-aircraft fire called FLAC, and they couldn't get the bomb bay doors back up, and as a result that caused a drag on the plane, and they lost airspeed and fell behind the bomber formation that was heading back to England to their bases, and as a result they became easy prey for German fighters, and two German Focke-Wulf 190s just came in for the kill, like, you know, wolves or lions to prey.
Mm-hmm.
And in the ensuing air battle, the Susan Ruth was shot down. Two of the 10-man crew were killed in the plane, and the other 8 bailed out successfully. But both those two German pilots were shot down as well. One fighter was piloted by Siegfried Merrick, and the plane crashed, and he was killed in the plane. And the other was piloted by Hans Berger, who was able to bail out and made it through the war.
And how did you know who those pilots' names were? How'd you know who those pilots' names were?
Well, that's a pretty good story in itself. All my dad knew and all the U.S. Air Force knew was that the plane was attacked by two German Focke-Wulf fighters. Sure. And that's all I thought I'd ever know. But one day during my research, my wife just casually said, well, why don't you try to find the German pilot that shot down your dad's plane? And I thought, she's naive. She doesn't know what she's talking about. You know, it's ridiculous. There's no way in the world
no
I'll be able to find him. You know, I figured most likely he died during the war or it's 70 years later. He's passed away by now. I can't speak German, so what's the point? But like a good husband, I did what she told me to do. And I found Hans Berger. I Googled trying to find a Luftwaffe pilot. A couple forums came up, which I joined, and I posted inquiries because I knew the day the plane was shot down, the time of day, and the location. In a week, two guys got back to me, one from England and one from Belgium. And on that day, there were 12 B-17s shot down, and the one shot down south of Chimay, Belgium, right near the French border, was shot down by Hans Berger. And then I found out that the gunners on my dad's plane shot Hans Berger down at the same time. They shot each other down.
Oh, my God.
Unfortunately for me, Hans became a translator after the war, so he speaks perfect English.
So, no kidding.
Yeah, amazing. Just amazing. I was so excited when I found him. For the book, I only interviewed him over the telephone and through email, and I just bombarded him with all these questions at one time. He goes, Steve, you know, we really don't know each other all that well, and you're asking me all these personal questions, but I built up his trust, and we become good friends. Since the book was published, I've been to Munich, Germany, where he lives, you know, to meet him in person. And as I said, we become good friends. And he's the only person in the shot down story who's still living. He just turned 97 years old in October. And I called to wish him a happy birthday.
That's great. Like, this guy shoots down your dad's plane. And 50 some odd years later, 60 some odd years later, you're like, yep, we're friends. That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. It's absolutely incredible. I filmed an interview with him on one of the trips. We had a camera crew. In fact, I've made a little 13-minute documentary about the shot down story. But he says that, you know, we sat there and he's going, it's incredible that we're sitting across from each other and he's, you know, shot down my dad's plane and then the gunners on my dad's plane shot down him. But a lot of people ask me when I'm out speaking and signing books, like, well, don't you hate this guy that shot down your dad's plane? He's the enemy. And really, no, I felt a personal connection with him from the get-go. To begin with, really, you know, he was pretty much just like the U.S. airman. He was 20 years old, you know, fighting for his country, trying to do a job and trying to stay alive. He said it was unfortunate they had to be firing and shooting at each other, but that was war. And at one point in time, Hans' path, life's a path, crossed my dad's path, and there was no other moment. World War II was the defining moment in my dad's life, like I think any guy who fought during World War II. And so, you know, Hans is part of my dad's story, part of his life, and I felt a real kind of kinship with him, and we've hit it off and had a few beers together. And
did your dad and him ever meet?
No, my dad wasn't the last crew member to die, but he was the oldest at 91, which was in 2007, and I didn't decide to write the book until 2012, and I didn't come across Hans until 2014.
Oh, got it. Okay. Yeah, fair enough. That's incredible. I cannot believe that even happened. Like, you found the guy. But that's incredible. That's incredible.
Yeah, what are the odds?
So what's the story on the Susan Ruth? So you said that the Susan Ruth was named after your sister?
Yes, she was 1 year old. My dad was the first pilot, And as a result, he was the commander of the crew and the plane, and had the last say, you know, on what the plane was named. The pilot always had the last word.
Right.
And of the 10-man crew, there was only three that were married, because most of the guys were, you know, in their early 20s
18,
or
19,
late 20. Teens.
Yeah.
And he was the only one of the crew that had a child. So I guess that just kind of naturally, so they decided to name the plane after her.
Huh.
It's interesting that the Air Force was the only entity that allowed their planes to be painted. The Marines didn't, the Navy didn't, nor did other countries. But Air Force thought it would help the morale of these young, guys if they could personalize their planes.
Yep. Yeah, and that's why, man, being an F-15 crew chief, that's what we wanted to do. Like, we wanted to personalize our airplane, but the military now is very, very standardized, very regimented, very regulated. So there's no way. I mean, when we were in 2003 in Iraq, bombing during Iraqi freedom, we did it in chalk, and we had an artist that was really good and painted one of the ladies, from World War II. We had picked a bombing lady. We're like, let's do this. And so, right on the nose of the airplane, right on the side, on our flag aircraft, flag jet, our squadron airplane, our flagship, they chalked in different colored chalk, on the panel. That way you can just take some water and it'll just wash right off. It's not paint, it's permanent chalk. So when we were leaving the AOR, we actually had to scrub it off. So, we got water bottles out there, spray can, and we just power washed it off. No big deal. Made sure it was nice and clean, and then sent it home. So everything was just, it was done in chalk. Well, we were like, well, what about the other planes? What about the other ones? And they were like, no. No. Oh, come on. So the Susan Ruth was a plane piloted by your dad, named after your sister, super cool, and B-17, so did bombing missions over Germany and everywhere else that was in, World War II. So what happens? So Hans is shooting your dad down, and they crash land or whatever. So what happens after that? How did the Belgian people get involved?
Okay. Well, after my dad bailed out, he came in down into some trees and his parachute got hung up on the branches and he was dangling 20 feet off the ground and couldn't get down. But fortunately for him, a couple of young Belgian men, Henri Franken and Raymond Dervin, came to his rescue before German patrols arrived. It happened in the early afternoon. They told him to stay put and hide because they thought it was too dangerous to try to move him during daylight with German patrols in the area. So that night they came back and got him and took him to the Dervin farmhouse, but he only stayed there one night because they thought, again, it was too dangerous with those German patrols in that area. So the next evening, a Belgium customs officer, Paul Tilken, came on a tandem bicycle to take him to another location. And after that, he was moved from place to place to place. How long he stayed at any given location depended on how brave the people were who lived there and how dangerous the Belgium underground thought it was for him to stay there. He might stay one night. He might spend 6 weeks at a location. And that was – and there's several instances described in the book that he was almost discovered by the Gestapo, which are pretty thrilling. And finally, he got tired of hiding. I mean, it was really stressful hidden. First of all, his plane's attacked. It's on fire. He's got a bailout, comes down in a foreign country, has no idea where he is, doesn't know what happened to his buddies on the crew, can't communicate with the U.S. military. And here he's being helped by complete strangers. They can't speak each other's language. He has a little French-English dictionary in his escape kit that he could refer to. And any one of these people could be a collaborator and turn him over to the Gestapo.
Right.
Finally got tired of hiding. Now, word came that the Allies had landed at Normandy June 6th, D-Day, And he wanted to get back in the fight. Unlike most airmen, before he volunteered for the Air Force, he was in the Army for a year. So he was trained as
an infantryman.
Yeah.
Oh, no kidding.
He was trained as an infantryman and knew how to fight on the ground. And he thought it was his duty to get back in the fight because there's other, you know, his countrymen are out there giving their lives, and which was extremely dangerous. The safest thing for him to do was just to stay hunkered down and hiding and wait for the U.S. armies to come up through France to liberate that area. But, you know, I don't know. He was pretty brave and pretty courageous to decide to join the French resistance to fight against the Germans. And the French resistance, they were called the Mackie. They were made up of ragtag, small, independent guerrilla groups spread all over France. And they harassed the Germans. They sabotaged communications or disrupted communications, sabotaged railway lines, attacked convoys, assassinated German officers, and they got their instructions from the British over the BBC through coded messages, and they were also supplied by the British through airdrops. So, and there are several encounters described in the book that this group had with the Germans. There were about 20 in his group, led by a French lieutenant who had escaped from a German prisoner of war camp. And so, I don't know how many there's very, very small number of men who fought in the 8th Air Force who were shot down and ended up fighting with resistance. Incredible.
Oh my gosh. That is incredible. Wow. So in the bio, it talks about how some had died, some were captured, and then some made it all the way back to England. What happened with your dad?
Okay. Well, while he was fighting with the French resistance, one day on actually it was September 2nd of 1944, 7 months of missing in action, word came that there were U.S. troops in a nearby village of Trelon, France. So he walked into the village, into the town square, went up to an army major. Actually, it was an element of Patton's Third Army, which had come up through France after D-Day. And he identified himself, and they interrogated him to make sure he was who he said he was. And when they were satisfied, he hopped a ride on a convoy that was taking German prisoners to Paris. And then from Paris, he hopped on a C-47 and got back to England and reported to his base with the 306 bomb group at Thurlow, England, where he sent my mother a telegram saying he was fit as a fiddle and to bank the money, honey, because he had all that back pay coming.
Bank the money, honey. Oh my goodness, that's amazing, man. What I was thinking the whole time, because I mean, back then, you know, we didn't have, you know, phones and things like, you know, that we do now. I'm like, so he finds a group that he can fight with. You know, my first thing was I gotta send word back somehow. I gotta send word, you know, either back through back channels, like through the Brits down to, you know, wherever. But I think back then there was a lot of spying going on too, and people were listening to communications and they were listening to those back channel radios and things like that. So maybe it wasn't a secure net, you know. But my first thought would have been like, dude, I gotta tell somebody that I'm here, like I'm alive, like I gotta call somebody, I gotta tell somebody.
Well, he did write a couple letters to my mother while he was in Belgium in hiding, but they never made it to her.
Jeez.
You know, all she knew that they were shot down on February 8th. On February 23rd, she got a telegram from the War Department saying your husband, Lieutenant Howard Snyder, plane was shot down and missing in action. And my other sister, Nancy, was born while he was missing in action. So that was really tough on my mom, because she was back in Pasadena, California, with a one-year-old baby girl, Susan Ruth, and then an infant girl, Nancy. And here she has these two little girls and never know whether she's going to see her husband again.
Is that in the book, too? Is that, like, from your mom's perspective?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's lots of excerpts from letters from either crew members or relatives of the crew that really make it personal. Some of them are really moving excerpts from letters between, like, the wives or mothers or sweethearts back home after they found out that the plane was shot down and they didn't know what happened to their loved ones. And
have
then
you ever thought
they
about contacting
did find
Netflix?
A lot of people who read the book say it should be made into a movie. So.
Maybe because I'm military, man. I gotta know, like how has this changed people's lives? I mean, I'm just big picture here. Okay, you connected with the guy who shot down your mom or your dad. I'm sorry, your dad shot down your dad's plane. You also know the other guy who was with him, who was his wingman, who had shot down other planes and things, whatever, right? You then know names of the people who were Belgians helping the Americans escape from the plane wreckage and house them and help them to not get captured. And then he's fighting with the French League, and then he goes over and finds Americans who then go back to England and say, "Hey, I'm back." Like, hello, you know, like, holy cow, what a great story!
Yeah, it's incredible. And going on my trips to England, I've been in many buildings, homes, and farmhouses. You know, in the specific rooms where my dad and other members of his crew stayed. Been in that those spots 75 years ago, where all that took place.
The houses are still there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This occurred in southern Belgium, which is all very rural farmland. It hasn't changed in hundreds of years. So all these places are still there. And so you can see where all these events took place. Schoolhouses, farmhouses, and, you know, not only where my dad were, but as I mentioned, the book is not just about my dad. It's about what happened to each other member of the crew, because something different happened to each guy, and they have their own story, you know, in themselves, which is amazing.
Man, I would love to see this made into a movie. I think it's incredible, because there's probably a lot of stories just like that where planes were shot down and you never really knew what happened to the crew, and maybe some of them lived. We're not really sure. But it's amazing that this incredible story happened to your dad, and then you can tell the story for the people that didn't make it either. And I love that the most.
Yeah, because 5 of the 10-man crew came home, but 5 did not. And there are other downed airmen from other B-17s that are involved in the story too, that come into the story, and some of them make it and some of them don't. So there's tragedy, but then there's, you know, salvation and a happy ending for some, even though there's tragic endings for others. It's amazing what those guys went through back then. You know, they were the greatest generation.
Yeah. So I was a drill instructor for Air Force basic training from 09 to 13, and I was in the Henry Irwin squadron, the 320th training squadron named after Henry Irwin. And what I think is fascinating is a lot of these guys the squadrons were named after these guys. So Henry Irwin is a World War II hero, and there's a book about him called Beyond Valor. It's called Beyond Valor, and it talks about and when we go and listen to and read Air Force history, this guy Henry E. Irwin is in there, and they call him Red. So we would call him Red Irwin, but part of the training that the trainees receive when they get to the 320th training squadron is, who is Henry Irwin? The Henry Irwin squadron, and the Red Irwin. But who is that? So he was a United States Army Air Force airman and was a recipient of the U.S. military's highest honor, which is the Medal of Honor. But he was a Medal of Honor winner for his actions in World War II, and he was a radio operator on a B-29 Superfortress. And what happened during World War II was that they were flying over Japan and suffered severe, like, third degree, if there was a fourth degree burns, but severe, severe burns on his body and his hands, because there were a midair accident that was happening. So a smoke bomb burst in his airplane. They had smoke bombs. It burst in his airplane, and in order to save the crew, he grabbed it. While it was going off, he grabbed it and threw it out of the airplane. And so he got the Medal of Honor because he saved his entire crew. And I don't know how many people maybe would have done that, but the story goes that they were on an attack on a chemical plant north of Tokyo, and there was a phosphorus smoke bomb, and phosphorus is very, very dangerous. It burns through everything. Well, it was burning through the bottom of the plane, and so he grabbed it and threw it out of the airplane in midair, and it burnt his whole body.
Oh, gosh.
So, and that hasn't made it to a movie. You know, I mean, there's talks about it, but, I mean, there's so many stories from World War II and, you know, from other wars. You know, both my grandfathers were in the Korean War. And my grandfather was an ammo driver, and he wouldn't talk about it. Neither of them do, but specifically my mom's dad would never talk about it. He was an ammo driver. He drove ammo to the front lines and drove bodies back from the lines.
Oh, boy.
And that's all he said he'd do. He goes, that's what I did. I'm like, what was it like? What was it? He's like, I don't want to talk about it. And would just get up and walk away. He just didn't want to talk about it. He spent years in the Army, years and years in the Army. And he would only talk about him doing KP. He'd only talk about him getting in trouble. He'd only talk about some of the guys that he served with, but that was it. He would never talk about any of the action he saw, the people he loved. He would never talk about it, ever. So, and my other grandfather was an infantryman, and he would never talk. I was like, so did you really shoot anybody? Like, did you see it? He's like, I'd rather not talk about it. Like, there's things that they saw that they just don't want to talk about. And I'm sure your dad's the same way. I'm sure he doesn't want to talk about a lot of people, right?
Yeah, that's a familiar story, you know, that I hear from a lot of people. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, a lot of those guys, they just and they don't consider themselves heroes or anything. They just said, we had a job to do. We went over and did it, and then we came back and got on with their lives.
Same.
You know, like just another day at the office.
Same. Yeah, you know what? A lot of people that – I'm like, thank you for your service. Thank you for your service. And I said, yeah, thanks. Yeah, okay, thank you. You know, like, I don't know. I mean, I appreciate it, you know, but I look at it as I signed up. I wrote a blank check at 18. I wrote a blank check, you know, that said, you know, paid by my life, you know, like, you know, and I was, it didn't really matter to me until in 2013. We deployed to the Middle East, and I had a baby on the way. And that was like, okay, I got to be careful. Because I got married in 2007, and we had a baby on the way in 2013, and I was deployed for 9 months to the Middle East. And they were like, hey, he wants to go on this convoy, and who's going to do this? We need a guy for this. And we had all these different jobs to do, and I had to pass them up, like, I'll just stay. Like, I'll just, you know, they're like, come on, man. Like, you're always jumping in. I'm like, yeah, I got a baby on the way. Like, at that point, it was like, like, I have a job to do, but I also have a wife at home, you know? So, like, the dangerous stuff, they're like, hey, man, you know, we need somebody to do this. I'd be the number one person to volunteer. But I was like, nah, I've already done that stuff. Hey, if you need me, I'm here, you know, but I had a baby on the way. It was like, what do I do? Like, that was a very moral conflict that I had inside that I had to deal with. So there's a lot of stuff that I did super dangerous over there that maybe I shouldn't have done, but I mean, your country needs you, you know? So yeah, that's tough.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your time so much, Steve. I love the story. I think it should be made into a movie. I think that it would be an amazing story to watch unfold in a movie, and would really honor everybody involved. It would honor so many people involved, from the people in Belgium and the people from the French and the Americans and, you know, all that. So I applaud you for writing this book and winning the awards, and just, you know, in your own way, you know, being a patriot for the USA.
Well, you know, the World War II was 75 years ago. It's fading in people's memory, and it's our duty just not to let that happen. You know, that's why I do what I do.
Yep.
And, you know, traveling all over is try to educate the people, you know, remember the air war for Europe, to honor the men who fought it and to educate the public about it, especially the younger generations who really, you know, don't know a lot about it. It's not being taught in school. And
right.
As they say, if you don't remember history, you're bound to repeat it.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. Steve, thank you so much for being on the show. Where can people buy the book? Where do you want the listeners to go?
Okay. Well, most people buy books on Amazon. So it's available as a print book, both in paperback and hardcover, that has the 200 photographs in it. But it's also available in any electronic book, ebook format, such as Kindle. And then it's also available as an Audible book, too. If somebody wants an autographed copy, they can go to my website, stevesnyderauthor.com, Snyder spelled S-N-Y-D-E-R. For people outside the U.S., a good place to buy books is at Book Depository. They have free worldwide delivery and have discounted prices.
Yep.
So those are probably the three main places that people buy books.
Love it.
Those three places.
Perfect. Perfect. I'm definitely going to get me a copy. I'm definitely going to get a copy of that book. And I can't not wait to read it. I'm so intrigued. And, you know, being in the Air Force, and my dad's, you know, he was in the Air Force, you know, in Desert Storm, and retired about a decade ago. So, I just, you know, military family, you know, I love stuff like this. You know, like I said before, it's a little hard for me to watch movies like now, like about the Iraq War and Afghanistan and things like that, because I was there. Kind of like, I'm sure,
sure
it was hard for your dad to talk about, you know, that stuff. But like, I love the history. That's what I love about it. I love every time I see a veteran, like I'll see a guy's wearing a hat, like Korean War veteran or Vietnam veteran or something like that. You know, I never thank them for their service. I walk up to them and I say, hey, I just wanted to say thank you for paving the way for guys like me to serve. I'm currently serving right now, and I just want to thank you for paving the way and making it possible for young men like me to follow in your footsteps. You know, I think that's very important, that I thank the older generation for their sacrifices so that our generation can serve.
That's nice. Very nice. I like that.
Well, I wish you and your family the best for the rest of 2020 and whatever holds true for you guys in 2021.
Well, thank you very much, Sean. I really appreciated being on your show. I had a great time. And again, happy Veterans Day to you. You stay safe and take care.
Thank you. Thank you. Same to you. Life Transformation Radio listeners, an amazing guest impacting the world around him. If anything's resonated with our conversation today with Steve Snyder, author of Shot Down, go ahead and get his book at stevesnyderauthor.com. It's also available on Amazon. Go ahead and check out his Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, and Twitter links. They're right there in the show notes. Connect with them. send them a message, letting them know that you listened to this episode of Life Transformation Radio. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and share out this episode and share out the show so that other people can find out about what we're doing here on Life Transformation Radio. With that, I close the show by saying live your brand. Find opportunities every day to live out the core values that you hold deep in your heart. And I call this living your brand. So until next episode, live a great life.